Okay, so today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 2, texts 47 to 48, and also 49. So just do 47 responsibly. Ya, etang, paramang, guyam, itihasam, agapaham, ashinuyach, shadeha, yukto. You got the right verse there? Oh, that's what you did, 49, because that's the next verse with a purport. But actually, even the verses without a purport are significant. It's not that we skip verses just because we don't have a purport. Okay, so we'll do... All right, yeah, I understand. So let's do 49 responsibly, and then we'll go back to 47 to 48. That's why I asked the other day which verse you had written, because sometimes people skip ahead. But that's not appropriate to skip ahead. Okay. Mriyamano Harer Nama Grinan Putro Pacharitam Ajamilo Api Agad Dhamma Kim Uta Shadaiha Grinan Miyamano Hare Dhamma Grinan Purtro Pacharitam Ajami Lopya Gad Dhamma Kimuta Shadaya Grinan. Go back to the previous two verses, which you so nicely skipped. Yayitam Maramam Guyam Itiyasam Gapaham Shunuyat Shadaya Yukto Yascha Vakya Nukirtayet Navaisa narakam yati nekshito yama kinkarahai yajapya mangalo marcho vishnu loke mahiyate. So we'll do the word by words for these two verses that I just recited. Yaha, anyone who, etam, this, paramam, very, Guyam, confidential. Itihasam, historical narration. Agapaham, which frees one from all reactions to sins. Shinuyat, hears. Shadaya, with faith. Yuktaha, endowed. Yaha, one who. Cha, also. Bhakja, with great devotion. Anukirtayet, repeats. Na, not. Vai, indeed. Saha, such a person. Narakam, to hell. Yati, goes. Na, not. Ikshitaha, is observed. Yamakinkarahai, by the order carriers of Yamaraj. Yadiyapi, although. Amangalaha, inauspicious. Marchaha, a living entity with a material body. Vishnu Loke, in the spiritual world. Mahihate, is welcomed and respectfully received. So, translation for those two verses. Because this very confidential historical narration has the potency to vanquish all sinful reactions, One who hears or describes it with faith and devotion is no longer doomed to hellish life, regardless of his having a material body and regardless of how sinful he may have been. Indeed, the Yamadutas who carry out the orders of Yamaraj do not approach him even to see him. After giving up his body, he returns home back to Godhead, where he is very respectfully received and worshipped. So, as we said, there's no purport to that text. We'll read the next text, which was the one we did responsibly. I won't read the word-by-word synonyms, but we'll do the translation. While suffering at the time of death, Ajamil chanted the holy name of the Lord, and all the chanting was directed toward his son. He nevertheless returned home back to Godhead. Therefore, if one faithfully and inoffensively chants the holy name of the Lord, where is the doubt that he will return to Godhead? So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And this is a long purport which includes the supplementary note to the chapter, because this is the last verse in the chapter. At the time of death, one is certainly bewildered because his bodily functions are in disorder. At that time, even one who throughout his life has practiced chanting the holy name of the Lord may not be able to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra very distinctly. Nevertheless, such a person receives all the benefits of chanting the holy name. While the body is fit, therefore, why should we not chant the holy name of the Lord loudly and distinctly? If one does so, it is quite possible that even at the time of death, he will be properly able to chant the holy name of the Lord with love and faith. In conclusion, one who chants the holy name of the Lord constantly is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. And so there's this supplementary note to the chapter, which Srila Prabhupada wrote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to text 9 and 10 of this chapter form a dialogue concerning how one can become free from all sinful reactions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Someone may say, it may be accepted that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one becomes freed from all the reactions of sinful life. However, if one commits sinful acts in full consciousness, not only once but many, many times, he is unable to free himself from the reactions of such sins, even after atoning for them for 12 years or more. How is it possible, then, that simply by once chanting the holy name of the Lord, one immediately becomes freed from all the reactions of such sins? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur replies by quoting verses 9 and 10 of this chapter. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief of gold or other valuables, for a drunkard, for one who betrays a friend or relative, for one who kills a Brahmin, or for one who indulges in sex with the wife of his guru or another superior. It is also the best method of atonement for one who murders women, the king or his father, for one who slaughters cows, and for other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. One may atone for sinful life and vanquish all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name, although this is not called atonement. Ordinary atonement may temporarily protect a sinful person, but it does not completely cleanse his heart of the deep-rooted desire to commit sinful acts. We talked about that the other day. Therefore, atonement is not as powerful as the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. In the Shastras, it is said that if a person only once chants the holy name and completely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord immediately considers him his ward and therefore is always inclined to give him protection. This is confirmed by Sridhar Swami. Thus, when Ajamil was in great danger of being carried off by the order carriers of Yamaraj, the Lord immediately sent his personal order carriers to protect him And because Ajamiya was freed from all sinful reactions, the Vishnu Dutas spoke on his behalf. Ajamiya had named his son Narayana. And because he loved the boy very much, he would call him again and again. Although he was calling for his son, the name itself was powerful because the name Narayana is non-different from the Supreme Lord Narayana. When Ajamil named his son Narayana, all the reactions of his sinful life were neutralized, and as he continued calling his son and thus chanting the holy name of Narayana thousands of times, he was actually unconsciously advancing in Krishna consciousness. Pretty good. One may argue, since he was constantly chanting the name of Narayana, how was it possible for him to be associating with a prostitute and thinking of wine? By his sinful actions, he was bringing suffering upon himself again and again, and therefore one may say that his ultimate chanting of Narayana was the cause of his being freed. However, his chanting would then have been a nama aparada. Namno balad yasya hi papa buddhi. One who continues to act sinfully and tries to neutralize his sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is a nama aparadi, an offender to the holy name. In response, it may be said that Ajamil's chanting was inoffensive because he did not chant the name of Narayan with the purpose of counteracting his sins. He did not know that he was addicted to sinful actions, nor did he know that his chanting of the name of Narayana was neutralizing him. Thus, he did not commit a nama aparada. And his repeated chanting of the holy name of Narayana while calling his son may be called pure chanting. Because of his pure chanting, Ajamil, unconsciously, accumulated the results of bhakti. Indeed, even his first utterance of the holy name was sufficient to nullify all the sinful reactions of his life. To cite a logical example, a fig tree does not immediately yield fruits, but in time the fruits are available. Similarly, Ajamil's devotional service grew little by little, and therefore, although he committed very sinful acts, the reaction did not affect him. In the Shastras, it is said that if one chants the holy name of the Lord even once, the reactions of past, present, or future sinful life do not affect him. Wow. To give another example, if one extracts the poison fangs of a serpent, this saves the serpent's future victims from poisonous effects, even if a serpent bites repeatedly. Similarly, if a devotee chants the holy name even once, inoffensively, this protects him eternally. He need only wait for the results of the chanting to mature in due course of time. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the sixth canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Ajamil Delivered by the Vishnu Dutas. So, Omagana Timirandasha Yananjana Shlakaya Chaksur Unmiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, based upon this, it's better we don't preach philosophy. Because if you tell the people, right? Yeah, if you tell the people about the 10 offenses on chanting, and they chant, they're committing offenses. So better not to tell people, right? No. Why did I join the Hare Krishna movement? I could have chanted Hare Krishna without hearing about the 10 offenses and gone back to Godhead. Wow, Hare Krishna. Anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit about this. So, there's something called the Namabhas chanting, or level of chanting, in which one is not committing offenses. And there's different types of Namabhas according to the Harinam Chintamani, which is written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and describes a conversation with Haridas Thakur. So, there's different types of namabhas. Some of the types are chanting meaning something else, chanting jokingly, chanting derisively, making fun, like that. But in any case, that chanting has a great effect. Prabhupada, there's a story about Prabhupada that once upon a time, there was a newspaper article about the devotees that was not so favorable. And in that newspaper article, they were mentioning those Hare Krishnas, they're this, those Hare Krishnas, they're that. We can't stand it when those Hare Krishnas are in the airport distributing books. I wish someone would get rid of the Hare Krishnas. Anyway, something like that. And they read Prabhupada the article, or they gave Prabhupada the article, and Prabhupada looked at the article and said, oh, it's a very nice article. The devotees were thinking, what? What a terrible article criticizing us. And Prabhupada said, they're chanting the holy name of the Lord. So a devotee, somehow or other, in preaching, the first thing is to get people to chant. Just like in Scotland, and you know about this, they have this whole Gurunga campaign. Or had it. Do they still have it? They still have it. And what they did, some of you may have heard about this or may not have heard about this, is that they would trick people into chanting the name Gurunga. One of my disciples used to be part of the Scottish Yatra, and she was telling me all the stories. They would post big banners under bridges in the middle of the night when when nobody was looking, because you were part of that too, that the devotees would just like get some paste and paste it up under the bridge. And people, she told me that people actually thought it was the name of the bridge construction company. So they'd be driving down the road in Scotland and Gurunga, Gurunga, Gurunga. And there's one story she told me that once upon a time they pasted something under a bridge and the police came and arrested them, began to arrest them. Then they got a call on their radio that we have an emergency. There's another bridge and someone's jumping off a bridge. So they left the devotees, didn't arrest them, went to the other bridge and found it wasn't someone jumping off a bridge, it was another devotee pasting a Gurunga sign. So somehow, I know they pasting sign, you know, so everybody in Scotland was somehow or other, they knew about Gurunga. It was a Gurunga campaign. And to this day, actually, this one disciple, she lives in Leeds in the UK, she does that. She goes into the store, say Gurunga. She works as a social worker. All of her clients have to say Gurunga. And, you know, what's the magic word? The postman comes to her house. What's the magic word? Gurunga. That's very nice. It's very nice because Gauranga balite habi pulaka sharir, right? As Narottama Das Thakur says, that if one chants the name of Gauranga, you know, pulaka sharir, the hairs of the body will stand on end. So anyway, somehow or other, it is our business to get people to hear before we start presenting them too much of the philosophy. And in my experience also, because I didn't have any experience of the Gauranga campaign, I watched her one time, actually, and I was embarrassed how she was approaching everybody, including the bobbies, you know, the policemen there. She would just go up to a policeman and say, "Say Gurunga!" And I go, "Oh my God, hope she doesn't get arrested." So I was incredible. Yeah, very bold. So anyway, so my experience was, my first contact with Krishna consciousness was not the philosophy, was hearing from Srila Prabhupada chanting the holy name on the radio. It was they were playing in some music station, because I was listening to mundane music, and all of a sudden they put on the Hare Krishna album, and I heard Prabhupada, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And my whole life changed from that point forward. You know, completely changed. I couldn't stand my university anymore. You know, I've developed a distaste for the material energy. Of course, I was previously a vegetarian even before hearing the holy name. But I just like, somehow or other, you know, sadhu sangha, sarvasya shrikoi, lava mantra, sadhu sangha, sarvasya hoi. There was all perfection. I didn't get all perfection at that point, but you get all perfection by a moment's association with a pure devotee. And, of course, it was not only the holy name, but it was the holy name chanted by a pure devotee. Prabhupada said, one should hear the holy name chanted by a pure devotee, the Supreme Personality of God. If one hears the holy name chanted by a materialist, it won't be effective. you know, maybe a type of namabas, but it's not going to change your life. It's like, what's sarpo chisti ata poyam? Avaishnava makod girnam putam harikatam ritam shravana naiva kartavyam sarpo chisti atapyam. It's like milk, according to Sanatana Goswami, quoting from the Hari Bhakti Shudaya, that it's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent. In other words, it's not going to help you. Just like devotees, sometimes they like to listen to music chanted by professional chanters who are not even devotees. I mean, there's one professional chanter who doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in Krishna, eats meat, and so many devotees have his album. They think, wow, this is really nice, gets me Krishna conscious. But Goloka era Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. This Goloka Vrindavan, the chanting of Hare Krishna, descends from Goloka Vrindavan. So, getting back. So, there's Namavas chanting, and the Namavas chanting is so potent that even the Parabdha karma becomes eradicated. Parabdha karma means that karma or that result that you're suffering for at this particular point. There's Aparabdha, Parabdha, Kuta, Bija. We talked yesterday about the Kuta and the Bija. Kuta means inclination. Bija means the seed. Prabhupada said it, if fry is the seed, so the seed can't fructify anymore. So all these different types of karma become eradicated completely. So one may say, well, if all these types of karma become eradicated completely, why do I still get attracted to this, this, and that? Because, you know, Kuta and Bija get rid of. And Prabhupada describes it like momentum. Some of you may not know what momentum is. And Prabhupada describes it as the momentum of a fan. When you have a fan, you know, a fan, this thing spins around. Anyone here has seen a fan anyway? Oh, good. Okay, so a fan spins around and uses electricity, right? So what happens when you turn off the electricity? The fan keeps spinning. Actually, I have this nice device that was given to me by one child. It's called a spinner. Anyone's heard of a spinner before? It's really nice. I play with it all the time. Yeah, spinner. No? You don't know what a spinner is? Some of you young folks know what spinners are. It's one of the most popular things. And after you hit it like this, and it keeps spinning. It's really nice. It has these ball bearings inside and everything like that, so it keeps going for like 5 or 10 minutes. Even though you're not applying any more pressure to it or pushing it anymore. So, you have a spinner? I have one. It's good for stress relief when you're on the GBC to spin it. You spin it during the meeting. That's true. Actually, it reduces the blood pressure and has also good effects. So, I'll show you it later. Anyway, so it has momentum. In other words, it keeps spinning even after you haven't pushed it. So that's like, it's like a habit. You know, even though you're not forced to do something, you have a habit. I mean, we develop so many habits. I mean, for example, I'll give you an example of one habit that I have. For years, I could see things close without my glasses, and I couldn't see things far away. And now that I had cataract surgery, it's the opposite. So now, sometimes because of a habit, when I pick up a book to read it, I take my glasses off. And I go, what's happening here? You understand? But it's the opposite now. My eyes are the opposite than the way they were. So that's the point. So Ajamil, getting back to the point of Ajamil, Ajamil had this habit. Even though his desire for doing that was becoming diminished. You know, his habit with the prostitute, his desire was becoming, he was becoming purified, but just by habit. I'll give you another example of a devotee who was doing devotional service and his desire for material enjoyment disappeared gradually. This is the story of Yayati. Everyone's heard of King Yayati. Anyway, he was married, very nice, and what happened... He had two wives, actually. Actually, more than that, he had all sorts of girlfriends and everything like that. He was very attached. I'm not going to tell the whole story. But he was very attached to enjoying. And he got cursed by his father-in-law to become an old man. Because his wife, you know, anyway, he had a relationship with another woman, Sar Mishnah. His wife's name was Devyani. Devyani was the daughter of Shukracharya. So he had a relationship with Sar Mishnah, which is not his wife, which is just another one of his girlfriends. He had some children by her. Story in the Bhagavatam. We're not making this up. And so his father-in-law, Shukracharya, being very powerful, got very angry because his daughter, you know, really riled him up. And his father-in-law cursed him to become an old man. So all of a sudden, this young man who was enjoying with his beautiful wives and girlfriends became old. And so he still had the same desire, because the desire doesn't go away when you get old. Whatever desire you have is part of the, you know, Kuta and Bija stuff. So he was disappointed. She was disappointed, too, because she couldn't enjoy with her husband anymore. You know, who wants to be married to an old bag anyway? So basically, there was an arrangement made with Shukracharya that he could exchange his old age with one of his sons. And finally, one son, Puru, he agrees, okay, you can have my youth and I can become an old man. One son refused. He said, that was Yadu. He said, no way, Dad, because I need to spend my youth enjoying so later on I can get it out of my system. Anyway, and Yadu was the forerunner of the whole Yadu dynasty, too. So what happened is that Shukracharya agreed, Puru agreed, and he got back his youth and became young again. And he and his wife just say, Hari Bol, we're young again. But at the same time, when he was young again, maybe I should go to Shukracharya too. Anyway, so we got to find one of my disciples to give me his youth. They would never do that. Anyway, so when he was young again, he was enjoying, actually for hundreds or thousands of years or something like that. But he was also doing it in a dharmic way. He was doing devotional service too. It's described that he was actually a devotee. So as he was doing this, you know, it took him a long time, I guess, to come to the realization. As he was doing this, he eventually came to the realization, and he became disgusted with it. It was interesting. Because not simply by enjoying your senses, you're going to become disgusted with sense enjoyment. It doesn't work like that. Otherwise, the pigs would be the greatest sannyasis. Isn't it? I mean, if someone... It's not that the more you enjoy, the more detached you get. It's like... Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nichavarana kamarupena kontiya dushprena lena cha. So basically it was because he was chanting and doing devotional service. He became more detached. And then eventually he became so detached that, you know, he wanted his wife to become detached too. But the problem is if you tell someone this is nonsense, they get angry at you. You know. So instead of telling his wife all this enjoyment is nonsense, imagine someone's enjoying with his wife for like 100,000 years, and all of a sudden he tells his wife, this is disgusting. So anyway, Upadeshu himorkanam prakopayana shantaya. Anyway, she would just get angry with him. So instead of that, he instructed in a very nice way, which is how we should generally preach to people. He told a story. You know, so just like we started this class telling everybody, we don't start preaching about the 10 offenses against chanting or the regulative principles. You know, we tell nice stories to people. So whatever is appropriate. So he's told a story. And what was the story? He compared himself to a goat and his wife to a she-goat. He said, once upon a time, there was a nice goat with a beard on him. You know, if you've ever been to India, you see the goats have beards, right? It's nice. They don't shave. So it was a nice. He said there was a goat with a mustache too. Actually, mustache. He said too. the goats have mustache? I guess so. So anyway, so the goat, he was walking along and he found this she-goat that was in a well. Because that's actually how he met Dadiani. And he used his horns and he somehow or other dug the she-goat out of the well. And then he got married or had a relationship with the she-goat. And then he got interested in another she-goat. And the first she-goat's master cut off part of his body. Anyway, so he couldn't enjoy anymore. And this is a story in the Bhagavatam. I'm not making it up. And people think, why is he making these stories up? No, it's right there in the Bhagavatam. The ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, if you want to read about it. Anyway, so... And then he, you know, basically uses the story to illustrate, you're a goat and I'm a goat. You know, isn't it? Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kastam kamam arhite vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putukriyena shatvat shudyas yasmad brahma shokir twanantam. That's from fifth canto, Lord Rishabhadeva's instructions to his sons. He said, my dear sons, you're a human being, but you should not act like pigs, or literally vidbhujam ye means stool eaters. That's a pig. Like if you go to Vrindavan, you'll see that the pigs are very adept at cleaning the streets, at least the alleyways, because they eat the stool. Did you know that? No. Pigs, and also dogs, which are man's best friend. Did you know that? You didn't know dogs do that too? I'll tell you a story. It's a little disgusting. But many years ago, I lived in the forest. And I was wondering who was cleaning up the latrine every day. I thought, this is not like the story of Lokanath and Narottamadas Thakur. It's not one of my disciples. So then I looked out and I saw this nice dog who the devotees loved. He was cleaning up every day. So, anyway. So, Vidbhuja... So people think it's a man's best friend. They like to be kissed by a dog, right? My dog loves me. Yuck. I mean, why don't you adopt a cow at least? You know, cows are nice. They're pure. Every part of the cow's body is pure. So, go hug a cow. Not a dog. Anyway, so... So Rishabhadeva, Lord Rishabhadeva, was comparing like the activities of people in this world who are engaged in sense gratification to pigs. So in the same way, Yayati was comparing his activities to a goat, a male goat and she goat. And so his wife, Devyani, got the message and they both became Krishna conscious, went back to home, back to Godhead. So the moral of the story is, that if we really want to bring people to Krishna consciousness, we have to gradually give them Krishna consciousness in a very careful way. Like Prabhupada said, his typical phrase is, in like a pin, out like a plow. And that means, you know, you just like go in there. Or another example Prabhupada gave is that you really want to take over. Let's say you go to someone's house, you knock on the door, and they say, yes, what is it? You put your foot in the door and say, I'd like to distribute a book to you. Can I come in? Then you come into the house. And then you say, can I sit down on your couch? Then you sit down on their couch. Okay. And then you say, I'm really tired. Can I lie down on your couch too? And by that time, you've taken over the house. So that's our method. That's our method of preaching Krishna consciousness. In other words, give them the holy name. Like Prabhupada even said, you can give them Gornatai deities at home, even to a meat eater, and call them happy dolls. Did you know that? And you put a little mantra on it, and you say, chant this, and put a little food under them, and they'll become Krishna conscious. Not the dolls. Gornatai already Krishna conscious, but they means the people who are doing it. So In other words, we have to have so much faith in the process that it works. You understand? It works. We don't have to push people to become Krishna conscious. You know, we can't become like those Christian preachers who berate people, telling them they're going to hell. That's what happened to me when I first moved, I first visited a temple. The devotees told me I was going to hell. I walked in the temple, thought, yeah, let's see what this is. Oh, I knew it was the Hare Krishnas. And first thing, you know, I picked up one of Prabhupada's books to read it, and they said, you are not qualified to read this book. It was Isopanishad. You're not pure enough. You have to hear from me. You know, that's the first thing, you know. Second thing, I mean, when I heard from them, it was, Kali Yuga's coming on fast. People going to live underground. People going to be short as dwarfs. And you will be part of it unless you join this movement. That was the preaching. In 1969, actually, it was 69. So I said, hasta la vista. Did you understand Spanish? Goodbye. And then every time I saw a devotee for the next 2 years, I ran in the opposite direction. You know, just like, or I turned the car and just like, as fast as I could. I said, these people are crazy. And, you know, it's bad enough they were wearing dhotis. And so I really didn't, you know, I was chanting and I was doing, because I had heard Prabhupada on the radio, I was chanting and following regular principles. That was no problem. But, you know, weird people. And so then eventually I was living on a farm with some devotees, and I heard that someone is coming to town, Prabhupada. I heard Prabhupada is coming to town, and then Krishna in my heart, you know, because Prabhupada is the external manifestation of the guru, of the super soul, who was Chaitaguru. And so the super soul in my heart said, march to the temple and shave your hair off. So, and so it was like I was hypnotized by super soul, because no devotee told me to do that. Actually, even the people I was living with told me not to do it. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't brainwashed by devotees. It was brainwashed by the super soul. Because I told the people I was living with, I'm going to join the Hare Krishna movement. They got so angry, they started almost beating me up because I was maintaining them. I was taking care of them financially. So they thought, wow, our maintainer is going to go join that cult. So I did it anyway. And then there was Prabhupada, and that was because of Prabhupada. I joined because of Prabhupada's compassion, etc. So the point I'm making is that we just have to be very careful in presenting Krishna consciousness to people. Not simply rules and regulations we mentioned yesterday. It has to be presented, you know, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Take prasadam, spiritual food, you know, positive, positive, positive. Kirtan, you know, all these things, positive things, dance and chant. And when you get tired, like Prabhupada said, dance and chant. When you get tired, you eat. And then dance and chant some more. And eat prasadam until it goes up to your neck or past your mouth or something. And that's how we should preach. And Ajamil, of course, is an example of how he was made into a devotee without heavy preaching, just hearing the holy names. And that's the point, to have faith in the holy names that they will act on people. I mean, just like when I used to go to the universities and preach, or let's say share Krishna consciousness, I would just, basically, sometimes I would distribute beads to people, non-Tulsi beads to people, and just say, I want you to chant one round and come back tomorrow and tell me how you feel. No philosophy. Just tell me how you feel. So the person would come back and say, wow, I felt really good. Okay, try again. And then somehow or other, after a while, they become purified. I can tell them a little philosophy. You're not the body. Huh. Because sometimes if you tell people that you're not the body, they'll think you have a mental illness. You know, schizophrenia? Yeah, you imagine, you go to a psychiatrist, and you tell a psychiatrist, I'm not the body. They'll say, okay, here's this medicine for you. Actually, after I joined the movement, my father called the psychiatrist to talk to me. And he wanted, they wanted to have an excuse to just take me away from the Hare Krishna movement. You know, kidnapping or something like that. So I knew that. So I didn't preach to the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist said to me first thing, are you happy? And I said, yes, but are you happy? The psychiatrist never experienced that before in his whole life. It is patient that actually said that to him. I said, I'm very happy. You know, I love God. You know, and I know, no philosophy. You're not the body. Ooh, wouldn't have been a good thing. I would have been in a mental institution. You're not the body. I'm not the body. These five senses, you know, are just dragging you to hell. The tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. So, I mean, that's the point. We make friends with people. Actually, that's, in other words, to make devotees, making friends with people is a good thing, too. Making friends, you chant, you share prasadam, dadati brati ganapti, guyamakyati prichati, bhungte bhajate chariva. And that's easy. Then you make devotees that way. And then later on, they find out about the 10 offenses, and then they have to stop doing these things, you know, chanting on the strength of chanting, sending on the strength of chanting, you know, which is very important. We should not, if we try to use, now that we have knowledge, chanting of Hare Krishna to continue sinning, then it won't work. We won't be freed from the sin, and we'll be committing an offense. So we have these 10 offenses, but don't apply them to non-devotees. Okay. Any questions or comments about any of these points? Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Once I've been doing this book distribution on the street, and then there were Spanish students, man and his lady came, and then I gave them, I think it was chant and be happy, and he was asking me about how about sex and Hare Krishna. I said, don't worry too much about it. Yeah. It's all right and so on. And then he opens the book and it's...
I get the idea. Yeah.
And then he gave me the book back and said, no, he was like inclined and favorable. But then he said, maybe it's not the right time, and so on. And then he went, so I said, Krishna, all right, what was your plan? So it was, if you can comment on...
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, there are certain things, like, especially nowadays, people read about certain things that are in the books about position of women and things like that. They go, ooh, ooh, and they go, goodbye. You know, anyway, so we have to be careful. We need introductory books, too, that may not, you know, it depends on the audience. I mean, for example, I have one introductory book I published. It's called You're Not the Body. Some of you may have seen that book. It was actually translated into Croatian. And we just have to be careful with our audience like that. Yeah, and then also be ready to explain certain things that are stated in the book. Yeah. I mean, what can you do? That happens sometimes. So, in a case like that, I would explain to them. I said, you know, what is this that caused you some disturbance? You know, could you tell me that? And I'll explain in such a way that they don't feel threatened. You know, there are ways to explain, such as Varnashram explanations. You know, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, people in different classes, they have different rules and regulations. You know, there's different things you can explain about that, a particular point about sex. But, you know, I would definitely ask him, you know, what in this book, you know, caused you some disturbance, and let me explain what it means. All right. Yeah. All right. Who? Yeah. Microfono.
He's asking, you mentioned about your book. You could explain a little bit about how the work, how the book is written, or the mainstream of the book.
Which book are you talking about now?
The book you talk about.
The book that I published?
Yeah.
You're not the body? It's the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and about the practice of Krishna consciousness without... It doesn't have things that would agitate people in the book. It's just, there's 64 pages, I'll explain what the book is. There's 64 pages in the book, half of the pages are cartoons illustrating an aspect of our philosophy. Everything from the cyclic succession, to controlling the senses, to chanting the Lord's holy names, to be engaged in Krishna's service. And, you know, the book has been translated into Spanish. In Mexico, there were quite a few. We distributed a lot of copies of that, tens of thousands of copies. In Spanish, it's been, I think Russian, they did it too. And in Croatian, you did it too. And in English, of course. In English, we printed like 100,000 copies of it. Some other languages too, yeah. And if you want to see it, you can go on my webpage, there's some links to it. I think so. Haven't checked my webpage in a long time. There's some links to the book. Actually, on the webpage there is. So you can see the book in English at least. Or we can pass out little pamphlets. You know, devotees in many places, they print little pamphlets and just pass them out for free to people. You know, there's different ways. Or just give people prasadam, or just give people something that they can digest. Yeah, other questions? Yeah. Yeah, Philippe.
Hare Krishna. So you're speaking about instructing people to chant, just, you know, giving them beads and just...
Yeah.
So I had one old friend who was interested in meditation. He asked me to instruct him a bit, and for 3 days, you know, he was getting up in the morning and trying to chant, and he didn't feel anything, you know. So why does it sometimes have a really strong effect, and why sometimes not at all?
Like, he didn't what?
He didn't feel anything, you know. He didn't have some experience.
He was afraid of feeling anything. It's just like people are afraid of giving up their sense gratification. I mean, just like when I joined the movement, one of the things I try to preach to my brother, and he said, don't explain the philosophy to me because you'll spoil my enjoyment. Ignorance is bliss, which is true. There's only two types of people who are satisfied in this world. Someone who's like a pig, yeah, and someone who's a devotee. So, you know, we basically... Prabhupada said some one time we actually spoil people's material enjoyment. You understand? You just tell them something, and every time that they try to enjoy the material world after that, they'll be thinking, I'm not the body, oh my God. You know, every time they're eating, you know, just like, some of you may experience them when you try to enjoy the tongue a lot, even in the name of Mahaprasadam. Like Prabhupada said, many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. Anyway, so... When you try to do it, you think, but I'm not the body, but I'm trying to enjoy. And you feel this real disconnect. You know, like, am I a devotee or am I a demon? I mean, And so he was really determined to not feel bliss or feel anything because he was attached. You understand? Maintaining material attachment. Anyway, it's not that everyone will feel bliss or feel happiness, but some people are innocent, some people are not so innocent. Like we talk about the second-class devotee approaching those who are innocent and those who are just envious. Like Prabhupada Listen, yesterday, Prabhupada said, we'd say to people, chant, 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 and they say, can't, can't, can't. They just refuse. I mean, like, even with my mother, it took her a long time to say Krishna. Like, if I were to tell her, for example, there's one devotee in the temple that she knows, and the devotee's name is a lady named Krishna Priya. So my mother would never say, address her as Krishna Priya. She would just say, Priya. I said, why don't you say her full name? No, Priya. Like in the Bhagavatam says, Bhagavad Gita says, O Rishikesh, the whole world becomes joyful hearing your name, but the demons are afraid and flee here and there. So now she says it. You know, it took about 200 years to get her to say the word Krishna. But you see that sometimes. Someone will just refuse to say that name. They'll say anything else. They'll say four-letter words, but they won't say Krishna. Because they're just like so much... I mean, they're not really even conscious of what they're doing. But they're so much averse to surrendering to God that it's just like, Krishna. They'll say everything else. I mean, that's why it's good to trick them, you know, Gauranga. We have one devotee who goes out, the Sankirtan lady, and she goes out... addresses a clown, you know her, Sadhvi, and she has, what is your name? Gauranga. And she, you know, she does Sankirtan, she says, and I have a friend called Neet Tai. You understand? Neet, you know, a tie that someone wears. My friend is called, this is my Neet Tai, and my name is Gauranga. Pretty good, isn't it? Gauranga Nita. And she, I think she has a song, isn't she? Gauranga Nita. That's pretty good. So somehow or other, we get people to say Gauranga. I mean, even if they know those Hare Krishnas are a bunch of crazy people. So even if they know and they don't want anything to do with us, you can get them to say Gauranga. Or Nitai. Because that's not. So any other questions or... Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Since we have a program in Zagreb with people coming in, so we also had one realization about preaching. We were talking to them very... not basic stuff, inspirational things.
Yeah.
And then after a while we realized that they were connecting it with all the other
religions.
New age things. Oh, yeah. And things. So do you have some advice for that?
You mean, in other words, you weren't giving them so much philosophy. You were just giving them, like, you got to feel good, you got to chant, like that. So you got to adjust according to the audience. That's all. You got to know who your people are. One of the most difficult things to do is preaching to a mixed audience. In other words, you got some people more advanced, some people less advanced. It's really difficult. I mean, I was just in a place in Sacramento, California, and devotees invited me to, you know, I was giving a lecture and everything like that, and then I had some people who were devotees for a long period of time, and some people just came for the first time to see what it was all about. Actually, no, it was in North Carolina, I'm sorry, at one of my disciples' houses. And the people who just came for the first time just walked out because I wasn't addressing them according to their needs. So I don't really like speaking to a mixed group. I really want to have just like be able to focus on one particular type of person when I'm giving a class. Like, you know, here you got all devotees, right? Everybody here is a devotee? No? Some demons? Yeah, one demon here. So anyway, yeah, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. But usually what I do is I have to know my audience before I speak. You know, I'll ask the devotees, who's coming tonight? Who are the people? What is their consciousness like? And then I adjust my presentation accordingly. So... But that's why generally when we do the university preaching, now, I don't let devotees come. You know, of course, some devotees are there. But it's not like an open program that devotees can come to, because it's not for them. It's very specialized. It's a very specialized type of preaching. And, you know, you can't really address the devotees' needs. And then you get, sometimes you get a mixed crowd with devotees, and they'll ask all these esoteric questions. You know, about, and, you know, all these questions, and people can't relate to them. So it's better, anyway, it's better to know your crowd, better to have a crowd that is all practically all the same level. So, yeah, one more question.
I wanted to ask, why isn't Bhagavad Gita published from devotees in this series of Bhagavad Gita for Idiots or something like that?
That would be nice. Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, Internet for Idiots, you know, they have all these idiot books.
Gita for Dummies.
Oh, Dummies, that's right. Gita for Dummies. Actually, that's a good idea. We should have Bhagavad Gita for Dummies. And, you know, chanting for dummies. You know, anyway. Yeah, why not? I think, you know, in the future we're going to need all sorts of different introductory books. And it's a good idea. So maybe you can write Bhagavad Gita for Dummies for us. How would you start? In the battlefield of, where would you start the battlefield? Not Kurukshetra, because people wouldn't understand. You say the battlefield in Great Britain. Actually, there was one metaphorical movie made about the Bhagavad Gita. It was about someone playing golf.
The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Yeah, Bagger Vance, you know, Bagger Vance or something like that. And the person playing golf was like Arjuna, and his caddy, you know what a caddy is? The person who carries the clubs was like Krishna. He has the legend of Bagger Vance or something like that. You know, Bhagavan, Bagger Vance. It's a Hollywood movie. Anyway, don't watch it. It was a stupid movie. So, you know, we can use metaphors and analogies and stories to help people understand the philosophy. Okay, it's time for prasadam. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.